This week's episode of the Film Stage Show is brought to you by Mubi, the streaming online curated cinema. For your free month trial, go to mubi.com/filmstage. You ain't nothing but a hound dog. Back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. As always, I am your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me today, we have Michael Snydell.
Hello.
Hello. We also have Bill Graham.
Woo!
Woo! We are here today to talk about the film Wiener Dog, the newest from director and writer Todd Solondz. And I'm pretty sure I said that right. And why did we decide to do this movie? Because we didn't feel like watching Sully. There's not else that's out right now. You wouldn't know it on Twitter because everyone else is at the Toronto International Film Festival seeing, apparently, some great films.
Yeah,
but we're stuck.
There's some really really good films coming out of that.
I know.
Right now.
I'm so pissed. I'm so angry I'm not there. But, you know, that's what life is. Hopefully
we're covering it all over the place.
The film stage is covering it.
Yeah.
Who gives a shit, Bill? We're not there.
I'm a
very selfish man. I don't care. I want to be there. Hopefully next year I'm going to try to be able to go, and I can do more of those wonderful audio dispatches that I did when I went 2 years ago.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's that. That's why we're going to be talking about Wiener Dog, a film that is new to streaming on Amazon Prime. Yes. I was going to say Amazon Instant, but that's not right. So we're going to talk about that. Let me remind everyone that we can be found on Twitter at Film Stage Show. We love getting emails. You can email us podcast@thefilmstage.com. Facebook, The Film Stage Show. And of course, you can find us on iTunes where you can give us a comment and a rating because we love that shit. And that is just on iTunes, on, I guess, your computer or your app. Dirty secret, I've never rated a podcast.
You have to get on iTunes itself.
Yeah. So I don't know how to
log in and do all that shit.
But if you take the time to do it and give us a star rating and a comment, we will read it on the air because we're awesome. Today's episode, of course, is brought to you by Mubi, the streaming online cinema. Every day, Mubi's curators find a new film for you to enjoy for 30 days. At the end of that time, it is gone. But again, a new film is added every day, so you're never without 30 wonderful choices of things to watch. You can also download them to your streaming device, which, as I always say, is my favorite thing. Because when you're on the subway, you can't stream Netflix, you can't stream Hulu, but you can stream on with Mubi because you're able to download it remotely to your device. We want to do something fun for next week. We're actually going to do a mini review before we talk about Blair Witch about something that is on Mubi right now. What is it? You all get to choose. Tell us, and we will choose one of your selections. Try to choose something that's been put on recently so that after we talk about it, people will still have time. Don't be a dick. Don't, like, tell us to do something that's disappearing tomorrow. Try to make sure there's at least 14 days left on it when you offer it up. So make sure to do that. We're looking forward to being able to talk about some stuff that you might not otherwise hear about. So that is mubi.com/filmstage to get your 1 month free trial to Mubi. Mubi, awesome as hell. still looking for a tagline that might be.
Oh no.
Mubi, awesome as hell. That's not a good one.
Flailing brand. Flailing.
No, I'm flailing hard. It's been a long weekend. I've had to deal with a baby. And that's about it. That's my only excuse.
Whose fault is that, Brian?
I guess mine. It was funny. She actually was super good today, but just wasn't falling asleep for the longest time. So for a while, there was a very real chance that I was going to be doing this podcast with just a baby in my arms. And she's started to get vocal So she's like laughing and cooing a lot. And I was just like, is there a way I can work that into the podcast? I don't know. But we don't have to find out yet, because I did get her to go to sleep, because that is one of my strengths as a father, apparently, is getting my daughter to go to bed. Which allows us to talk right now about the newest film from Todd Solondz, and that is Wiener Dog. This movie is made up of four vignettes. It stars a lot of people. We've got Julie Delpy, Greta Gerwig, Tracy Letts, Kieran Culkin,
and Ellen Burstyn.
Ellen Burstyn and Danny DeVito. So let's just hold your horses, Mike. Let's everybody talk about Wiener Dog.
Heel! Damn it. Heel! Mother. Heel! Heel, mother. Heel, mother.
A dog is not human. It's an animal. Nature doesn't care about them. It's sad but true. We're a dog's only friend.
Hey, Wiener Dog. She looks like you.
Thanks.
I'm going to Ohio tomorrow. Want to come along?
What's in Ohio?
Crystal meth.
Okay.
So that is the trailer for Wiener Dog. Again, a movie that does a little bit of the defying of the plot synopsis. It's four stories that are only connected by a dog. This dog doesn't appear to be going on a journey, because oftentimes it's impossible to know how the dog gets from one place to the next.
Only one of them seems to have like a logical through line.
There's only a through line between the first and the second.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess you could infer some really dark shit, but I don't know. So this movie is about four different groups of people dealing with shit while a dog is around. Let's talk about what we felt about this movie. So let's start with Bill Graham. Bill, what did you think of Wiener Dog?
Oof. Okay. So this film definitely has an interesting style. This is the first Solondz film that I've actually watched. And I knew I had heard about this at Sundance. This film had a crazy premiere at Sundance. Everybody was talking about the end, and it's, you know, I mean, it is what it is. It's one of those films that has a very kind of, I mean, you know, why would someone talk about the end unless it was crazy, right? So fair enough. That's all you need to know. the reaction to the film, though, I've heard people say all different things about this film. I think the most recent thing I saw about it was, don't watch this if you like dogs. And I was just like, what the fuck am I even getting into? And so the setup.
Well, I feel like I got to mention it. I asked on Twitter, because my girlfriend hates any movie where there's violence against animals. So I asked on Twitter whether this was okay. And people were like,
absolutely.
I didn't really get like a direct answer. Let's put it that way.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. They didn't want to. Yeah. It's very dry-witted. The sense of humor is very droll, and certain stories, I think, work a lot better than the others. I don't think there's a lot of not necessarily cohesion, but it almost feels like he had a first draft with some of these shorts. And he was on, you know, a fifth or sixth draft on some of the others. It feels like there was more work put into them. It feels like the character arcs and the storylines are a little bit more solid and kind of relatable. And so that's a difficult thing about like reviewing a film like this, is I can't say yes, this was good, or yes, or, you know, this was bad, because as a whole, it kind of defies that, right? But I would say probably the third story and the fourth story. So the third story has Danny DeVito, who plays Schmertz, who's a kind of laughed at professor at a school teaching screenwriting. And the fourth is Ellen Burstyn as Nana, who is visited by her young daughter or granddaughter, who's, you know, visiting out of the blue for the first time in a while. And I think both of those stories work really well. The other two, especially the one with Julie Deppley, man, that first story is rough. And so it's shot really well. The use of the dog is interesting to kind of show how life can be kind of altered by just the appearance of a puppy or a dog, whatever you want to call this thing. And it's funny because the dog, to be honest with you, does jack shit throughout the entire movie. Like, yeah. I don't know. Like, he's a Dotson. So if you like Dotsons, he's a Dotson. If you don't like Dotson, he's a Dotson. That's pretty much it. Like he's not like a cute little fluffy pug or something like that. That like does a lot of like little cute things.
Bill, do you think pugs are cute?
Yes.
Okay. I've never understood the pug thing. Also, are they particularly
pugs.
Fluffy?
You know, they're
like
wrinkly.
Short hair.
They're wrinkly.
Some lovely pugs.
I have a husky, so like that's my threshold for fluffiness, you know.
Okay. Well, yeah. You know. But,
you know, I just wanted to
yeah,
check.
Yeah, pugs weren't built for snow. No.
There's two people in this world. There's pug people, and then there's not pug people. And I guess I'm not a pug person. But I was just curious. Please continue.
I love. ever since Milo and Otis, I love pugs.
Oh, that's true. I was into that movie as a kid.
And so yeah,
a lot of animals died in that movie.
I'm really weirded out by the whole premise of this film, because it does follow this one dog who is given different names throughout. And like I said, they just found this dog that has like no personality whatsoever. It just doesn't seem to do a whole lot. And I'm really curious why he would set this film up to follow a creature that, I mean, I guess part of it is the mundanity of having a dog once you get used to having a dog, unless they're, you know, rambunctious and crazy, right? So I don't know. This film is really interesting. It's really weird. Some of the things that it's kind of touching on feel very amateurish. They feel very heavy-handed, and then at other times they feel like they have kind of like a deft touch. So yeah, good and bad. This film thankfully kind of towards the end gets a lot better, so that's one thing. But there are some awkward moments in the film, particularly with Greta Gerwig's character in the second story, that just made me want to just stop watching.
Okay.
Yeah,
Michael Snydell, what did you think of Wiener Dog?
I kind of hated this movie. So okay. I want to talk about it a little bit, though.
All right. I mean, that's what you're here for.
No, sure. I had not seen Slans's stuff until actually yesterday. I watched Welcome to the Dollhouse, which is I believe it was. Yeah, it was his debut, and it was a breakout. And I want to say it was Sundance, but I don't think it was actually Sundance. It was one of the festivals, but back in the 90s, and it was a breakout, and it was pretty. Welcome to Dollhouse has an interesting relationship to Wiener Dog as well, because Heather Matarazzo's main character in Welcome to Dollhouse is named Wiener, or Dawn Wiener, and that is who Greta Gerwig plays in the second. Second vignette of
just,
Wiener Dog.
Just real quick, that that was not his premiere. That was his actually his second film. So.
Oh, I'm sorry. Was That's Happiness right. his premiere then?
Fear, Anxiety, and Depression.
Okay, I've never heard of that.
That sounds like the perfect debut film for Todd Solondz.
Yes.
That just feels right.
So the weird thing about it is, you know, I'd read a lot of reviews. Actually, I would really recommend, if we're talking about champions of this film, our editor, Jordan Ropp, wrote a really good review for Wiener Dog out of Sundance.
We should probably mention this film is 75% on Rotten Tomatoes right now. So it's got a slew of really good reviews.
Yeah. It seems to definitely polarize people, you know, besides for people who have, you know, weak stomachs when it comes to anything where animals aren't being, you know, praised on a throne. but I guess what I want to – the reason why I mentioned that I watched that other film is I was kind of prepared for a certain agenda and worldview. And I didn't love Welcome to the Dollhouse, but I never felt like my face was being, you know, like, you know, pushed into the shit, for lack of, like, literally the shit, which there is a lot of shit in Wiener Dog. But so it's very interesting you mentioned that you liked the third and fourth vignettes more, because about the only one I liked was the one you said you disliked, which was the first and second one. I just want to get briefly into that. I mean, I think the third one with Danny DeVito, it has some of the worst writing of millennials since While We're Young. a movie I also really didn't like.
Really, you just didn't find all of those film students to be deeply realized?
I mean, they're more realized than the characters in Wiener Dog. And, you know, I guess the reason why I say I hate this movie is because I'm frustrated, because I think there are some interesting things in here. As much as there's a lot of amateurish bullshit, there is I like the idea of even what the first part sets up in terms of discussing, you know, taking a step backward and saying, okay, at what point did we decide what dignity is for animals? At what point did we decide, you know, what a consciousness means, or, you know, anything along those lines?
I think part of it is I like some of the things that it's trying to get at in the first part, but the way it's delivered is just, to me, just awful.
I would agree with you. I really like the way interestingly, the most cohesive visual sense. Like, it's like these static compositions, and like it literally returns to like the exact same setup. So you always have that front view of the, or not the front view, like from an outside view into the kitchen, like this modernist kitchen. And like that was, it was interesting you mentioned the draft part, because there is a sense that so many of these shorts, you know, feel incredibly half-assed once you get to it. But sorry, I'm getting off topic, but the reason I just wanted to mention those first two vignettes is the second vignette I found particularly interesting, one, because of its relationship with Welcome to the Dollhouse, but also because this is potentially going to show, you know, my lack of knowledge, and I'm sure there's plenty of films that do this, but it involves two characters with Down syndrome who are not defined by their condition. I'm sorry, I don't know the proper terminology here, but there are two characters who exist in that vignette and have a very interesting experience. I also have a very high threshold for any type of Greta Gerwig's performance, and I may have also been thinking about how Greta Gerwig is like emulating, you know, Dawn Wiener from Welcome to the Dollhouse. But I'm getting way too into small stuff. What I want to say big picture about this is that it's just insufferably smug. And the way that the dog is continually used as a prop in this movie just made me really angry by the end. And it's like half-assed, you know, attempts to deal with mortality. It's just none of those things felt well realized to me. And by the end, I was really tired of it being shoved down my throat, especially with an ending that's like, isn't humanity great? Like just a final, you know,
kick in the balls.
Yes, a final kick in the balls. All right, sorry, Brian, please go ahead.
Oh, I mean, I was hoping that you were just going to talk forever because I don't really have much to say about this movie. I don't, like, you know, Todd Solondz, I mean, Happiness is a fucking crazy movie, and I guess I expected this one to give me something to talk about just in terms of, like, outrage or discomfort or, I don't know, anything. And it's really not. Really not anything there. This really feels like a novelist who died a long time ago, and then they like found some of his early work, but it's like not enough for a book, so they just put it out, and they give it a novel's title, but it's really just a collection of short stories that all just happen to have a dog in them. And it's not. I didn't find it terrible. I mean, I watched the whole thing without pain, but when it was over I was just kind of like, all right, sure.
Did you feel like you've been bamboozled though a little bit?
No, because I knew it's Todd Solondz. I was surprised there wasn't more terrible shit happening, and I just like it just I get because I knew that it was four stories with a dog that connects them. I was a little bit miffed that the dog didn't do more and that the connection wasn't more firmly established. What I was sort of expecting, this is a weird parallel to draw, I was expecting it to play like Perfume, the story of a murderer.
Okay.
Because in that movie, Grunui, I think is his name, played by Ben Whishaw, like every time that he leaves to do something else, the person who lets him go dies. So, for instance, his mom gives birth to him in like a fish market, and she thinks he's like stillborn, so she just leaves him under her fish stall, but he starts crying, and so everyone's like, oh my god, this woman was gonna kill this baby, and so like they hang her. And then he is working for a perfumer, and the perfumer lets him go, and then the perfumer's like house collapses on him. So I was like, it's going to be something where the dog either runs away or is given away, and then these people meet a horrible end. But they don't, and without even that to give some sort of cohesion, it just really felt like Todd Solondz had four short films that he wanted to make when he was a film student, and he just decided to connect them all through this dog. Because the dog doesn't really grow or learn anything or do anything, which I guess is fine because it's just a dog. But like, why? Why? I guess why did I watch this? I don't know.
Sure.
Yeah. And why does it have a dog? Like, why?
Yeah. Like the dog is.
It could have been a cat. It could have been anything at this point. I mean, it could have been a fucking pencil.
Pete's Dragon was a more interesting movie about our relationship with dogs than this was.
Well, I don't know if this is supposed to. I mean, like, it's the weird thing because they get the dog fixed in the first vignette.
Sure.
And the boy, who is a cancer survivor, has this long conversation. The boy is, like, very precocious but super dumb. And I just didn't enjoy spending time with him.
But not dumb enough to not know what rape is and some of these other things that I was just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it was like, and it's just that thing where it's like, oh, this poor kid who's like thoughtful and he feels a lot. And then, you know, his mom and dad kind of suck. And But I mean, like, the kid feeds this dog like 17 granola bars or something, and it's like, why would you? I don't know. As a father now, I guess I'm thinking of like, what the hell would I have to do to make my child think that that's cool? It's just, and why would I leave a child who appears to be like a 9-year-old cancer survivor alone while I go
well, because
yoga?
He's over it. So, because he's good now.
Right, he doesn't have cancer. Nothing bad can happen to him in this modernist nightmare of a house. But that's not important. What I was going to say is, like, they fix the dog, which is, you know, fine in most places. Like, you have to. So it's great. I don't have any problem with that. But then there's another part where they're talking about this couple who has Down syndrome. And Greta Gerwig asks, like, what if they have a baby? And it's like, oh, like, her tubes are tied, and I think the brother was also, I guess the best way to put it is, sterilized. And I'm like, I guess they're making some kind of through line. That's interesting. I wonder what will...
Yeah.
Like, I kept expecting, like, one family to do something to the dog, and then the next place to comment on that in a human way. But that's really the only time it happens. So...
Yeah.
At a certain point, you just get used to the fact that, like, all right, I'm just going to see another unrelated story with varying levels of depression or sadness or dark humor, and then it's over. And
no, but then, like, but it's just like there are just so many things that feel like, you know, it's just flipping you the bird. Even that intermission thing is like, are you kidding me?
I didn't understand what the fuck that was.
I mean, that was playful, but it was still like within this movie, I'm like, all right, well, I'm not going to care about any of these emotional connections. Or right. Why should I if you're already laughing at your own sense of provocation?
So one of the things that I had heard kind of from the Sundance premiere was that this film was wrecking people. And I'm very curious who it wrecked and how, because like you're saying, Michael, this film doesn't give you a whole lot to like emotionally connect to, because it's always either moving on to the next story or it's just being a dick about like what it's trying to say and how it's saying it. And so you're just like, okay, you're just going to be a dick to me. Cool. I guess I'm just going to continue watching this movie. Like, I'm not going to get connected to your characters because either they're all assholes or, like, you're just not giving me a whole lot of reason to care about them. The only real kind of sequence that I really felt any kind of emotion was during Kieran's. What did I say that? McCulkin? What is his name?
No, Culkin. Kieran Culkin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I always see that name, and that just throws me for a loop. And
I have to say,
he has a story beat where he has to tell one of it's his brother who has Down syndrome, and he has to tell him something, and that emotional beat was perfect for me. But it was also one of those weird sequences where I could tell that it was shot on from one side to the, there's never a two shot of them. And I was just like, what is going on? Like, this just feels emotionally disconnected in the way that it was like edited together. I don't know if there was a two shot that like of the two of them, like talking to each other, but it like they don't use it until like, I mean, they basically just don't use it. And so I'm just like, I guess part of it is just I know a little bit. I don't know a lot about filmmaking, but I know enough to realize that those were probably edited together and they may have not been the same takes. And so I was just like, why would you do that? This is the emotional highlight kind of, you know, reflecting on it now of the film. And it's not a two shot. What are you doing? Why are you doing?
It seems like it's. That's the weird thing. At times it feels so studied in like its compositions, like the first part, you know, whatever I think about it, like visually it has an actual style. But well, then it yeah, also that's, alternates that's... between like feeling very shaggy and yeah, just also feeling amateurish, but all, none of those things are like building to some larger mood or like sense of connection with these people when it comes to the space. Like it's
yeah, I don't know. Honestly, like I just sat there watching this movie and you know, we're watching it at home and it was difficult not to look at my phone or like pause it to get up and get a drink. Cause when I'm watching a movie at home, especially one that I'm reviewing, I don't want to stop. I want to be lost in the flow like I would in a theater. And it's weird because like every once in a while when I've had to watch something for a review since having a baby, I've had to get up and do something for the baby, which usually is like, ugh, God damn it. Why can't this baby just stay asleep for 2 hours during a movie? And today she didn't stir this entire movie. And there came a point where I looked at her and I was like, I bet if I poke her real hard, she'll wake up and I'll have to like, you know, give her some food or something or just walk around with her. Because I didn't need to continue to be in this movie and I wanted to stop. And, but it wasn't like Kate Plays Christine where I was like angry because it seemed like it had an idea that it was going for and then didn't pursue it.
This film makes Kate Plus Christine look like an Oscar winning film.
It's not even so much that like it. One time I said about Queen of Earth that like I hated it. And someone said, but isn't it great that something can still make you feel like that? And I said something along the lines of like, no, because if you murder my family, I've felt something, but I would have rather just taken a nap, you know? But, like, this movie really does make me appreciate how something like Kate Plays Christine or Queen of Earth can at least appear to be trying to do something, and its failure will make me feel anger. Whereas this, I'm just like, I guess this is fine. I mean, it's pretty obvious this is what you want to do, but like, why? So it's hard to wrap your mind around. And so I guess, you know, if you're listening, director who subtweeted me last week, this is your delayed gratification. I guess that just the fact that I hated your movie so much means that it's better than Wiener Dog in a way. I don't know. It's hard to know. You know, I would tell people like, Kate Plays Christine sucked. And then if they asked about this movie, I'd be like, oh, who gives a shit? Like, watch it if you want to. I don't care. Like, I can't think of who would want to see this. And aside from people who love dogs, I really can't think of people who'd be too offended by this. It just doesn't register. Like, it has all the trappings of a movie that would do something, but oddly enough, it never goes there. Like, it's got like millennial bashing and Danny DeVito is a very sad man and Ellen Burstyn basically revisiting Requiem for a Dream territory. And you know, this cancer kid who is super precocious about his fucking dog and all this other crap that feels like it should be a little shocking or something, but it was just so dull.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, you know, It's fantastic that a movie can have two characters who have Down syndrome in it and they're married and they're super okay. Like they're the most okay characters in this film and it gives them an emotional moment. But like it's in this movie and it's just like, who cares? it was so weird to see I'm the last guy who gives a shit about like championing representation for its own sake, but like this is a great image of that. And you know, in a better movie it would be something to honestly talk about because it shows the way that you can have marginalized groups organically in a film for a real emotional moment without playing on their tokenism. And it's like, but it's, who cares? It's Wiener Dog.
Yeah.
It's so weird. It's so weird that there are so many things in this movie that should be like a hot button that it's like it was sat out too long. And so now they're like barely lukewarm buttons.
All right, I guess. Well, I feel like we should See, I don't know. Maybe not. I am still kind of curious about trying to hash out what he's trying to say.
It's hard, you know, if, it, like, there,
it do seems we like want to jump into spoilers?
In I guess. Yeah. Mike, the only thing I could think of as far as what he's trying to say is that, like, they do seem to be following age. Mm-hmm. You know? Like, we go from a child to a listless millennial to, like, an upset middle-aged guy to a woman who's dreaming about her death, apparently. So there's that, and, like, I guess you could say, like, it's viewing the timeline of human life through the eyes of this dog that just happened, but the dog doesn't do anything. And the dog doesn't really seem to give most of these people anything. It's just, it's like the feather in Forrest Gump. Like, it's a symbol of something, but it's completely unnecessary.
There's a feather in a Forrest Gump?
Yeah, the feather in Forrest Gump. The movie opens following this fucking feather.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh. And, like, you see that feather other places, but it's like, at what point, like, that feather, you know, if Forrest Gump was named, like, that fucking floating feather, that's basically, like, what this movie is. Except, you know, you would have needed to change Forrest to a different character every 40 minutes, I guess. I don't know. It's, like, I would love to have someone on here who championed this film. And I didn't have time to, like, read any other reviews to figure out what people liked about this. And it's not even, again, it's not even like Kate Plays Christine, where it's like, you know, Michael, for all of the issues I had with that movie, I understand that you saw things in it that I didn't. And I made a point to say that, like, it's going to be impossible for me to make you unsee those things, and I'm glad that you got that. But this movie, it's like, there's not even that. Like, I can't for the life of me suss out what someone could see in this movie beyond just, like, it's vaguely amusing. Like, I was moved a little bit.
This is in Jordan's top 10. We should really have Jordan on here.
I guess.
I wish we would have watched it sooner and then been able to realize just, that.
Jordan, get on. I don't know. I really don't know. It's not, but that's the thing, like, it's not bad. Like, I guess if someone put this on their top 10, I'd just say fine. Like,
sure.
Everyone has that movie in their top 10 where you're just like, oh yeah, that wasn't bad. I guess. Like, you know, I never would have put it on there, but sure, why not?
Yeah.
I like the idea of this movie, and I just, so, this movie just made me angry.
Let's jump into spoilers.
Yeah, let's get in spoilers, and we'll talk about more about what made you angry. What about it made you angry? I'm losing my ability to speak English. So spoilers for Wiener Dog. Snidell, what's... all right, well, I guess we'll just say Ellen Burstyn is the last person to have this dog. She names it Cancer. She has, like, the worst meeting with a grandchild ever.
And I like fantasy.
Fantasy seems pretty cool.
That was almost interesting for, like, half a second.
And then the dog, she has, like, this weird dream of, like, what is that? Who is that? Is that Sylvia Plath who has the thing about the fig tree?
I have no idea. I know it was referencing something, but I was just like, cool, these creepy little fucking children.
Yeah, so Sylvia, like, Plath has a thing in the bell jar about, you know, her life. It's a whole analogy, a food analogy, about a fig tree. And so I'm a good literary company. And she says that, like, each fig is a possible
life. I actually
read this,
Brian, and I don't remember specifics, so I'm the problem.
What was that?
I've actually read The Bell Jar, but I don't remember this specific thing, so I'm the problem.
That's crazy. But yeah, she has this whole giant thing, and it's, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it starts off, I saw my life branching out before me, like a green fig tree in the story, from tip of every branch, like a fat purple fig. A wonderful future beckoned and winked. One fig was a husband and a happy home, and then she just goes through a bunch of stuff. And then she says, I saw myself sitting on the crotch of this fig tree, starving to death, just because I couldn't make up my mind which of the figs I would choose. I wanted each and every one of them, but choosing one meant losing all the rest. And as I sat there, unable to decide, the figs began to wrinkle and go black, and one by one they plopped to the ground at my feet. And that's, first of all, a beautiful quote, and everyone should read The Bell Jar. that's basically what Burstyn's dream is. She like meets all these little girls, and one of them is if you would tip better.
And then I like that one.
Yeah,
I like
that, that was funny. And then she wakes up, and the dog Cancer isn't there. And then you see it running out into the street, and it gets hit by a truck, and then a truck, and then a smart car.
Yep, and then like a Mustang.
Yeah, and then it's over. Oh wait, it's not over because 6 months later, that dog has been stuffed and animatized by fantasy. And
you're not seeing me, but I'm doing a middle finger at my screen right now.
Yeah,
yeah, it's just like, but like, it's like, what is that? Like, what does that mean? Like.
And I also couldn't help but notice the daughter, like the granddaughter, was not there.
Yeah.
At the art show, so I was like, "What the fuck?" Like,
I mean,
so
they, I
he
know.
Got the money.
Well, he cheated on her, so you know.
So why would she give him the money?
Because she's weak, I guess. I don't know. Like,
because all people are terrible.
Zosia
and
Mammoth's
therefore
character is very pathetic.
Yes.
And. You know, I'm watching this like right after my grandmother had just visited me, and I'm like, I can't imagine treating my goddamn grandmother like that. Like going up to her and asking for $10,000 to help my boyfriend's visual arts installment, and
makes
then saying, I don't think he's being faithful, and then like running out. It's just like, ugh, God. And then the fucking poor dog gets hit by a car and then gets turned into an installment. I don't know. Mike, you wanna rail against this for a little while? I mean, you were flicking off the screen.
No, I just... I guess, you know, I had so much energy to be able to hate this, and I'm just like... I guess I'm becoming like you, Brian, because the more I think about it, I'm like, why am I wasting the energy on this movie that obviously had no interest in actually trying to engage me? In fact, just the opposite. It wanted, you know, it's a movie that continually just builds up, and we already mentioned the intermission. Like, all of those sequences are just, they're prophetic and leading up to something terrible, but it's like, it's weird that you mentioned that you expected more terrible things to happen. I was actually pretty excited when in the first one it was shot in a way where I thought the kid was dead. I thought that was a pretty good joke.
Yeah, that was I was
thinking
like, oh,
that
great,
he was gonna die.
Dead.
Yeah, because the first time we see the kid, I was like, is he dead? And then right in the middle of the movie he does it again, and then you're like, is he dead? Because he's got his eyes open,
just
and he's
waiting for this
not...
goddamn cute cancer kid to die.
He's got his eyes open and he's not looking at anything. He's looking straight up and he's not breathing, and you're just like, why do you keep showing this kid from above like this? Like, why is this a thing? And I guess, I don't know.
Well, they were obviously aware of that intention, but I would have liked that more, because instead of literally going into a, you know, didactic monologue about why, you know, death is a part of life and what really matters is truth, compassion, and love, which...
But...
That second, it sounds like even that second part, I'm attaching some meaning that you guys obviously didn't get from the standalone. Like, from the standalone, and it's only because I watched Welcome to Dollhouse that I found this, you know, more interesting than.
Sure.
I don't know. I'm running out of things to say about it, and I'm looking at my notes and they all feel very tired. There's just something about this worldview that's aggressively grim, and I just, you know, I don't have a problem when things are miserablest at all. But you know, like, have say what point. You will about Von Trier or Iñárritu. I don't know about Iñárritu, but Von Trier.
I was about to say, you want to walk that back a sec, buddy?
What's the first one? I'm More Perilous. That one's not, you know, total dog
21
shit.
21 Grams even isn't that bad. But I mean, like, Von Trier, like, you know, I fucking love Melancholia. Like, nothing makes me happier when I'm sad.
Same.
Than sitting down and watching Melancholia, watching the goddamn earth get destroyed. Because it's, like, the most it has the most antipathy of any movie I've ever seen for people. But
so cathartic.
Right, it's cathartic, and also, weirdly enough, it ends in, like, the only happy way that it could, and it's a very powerful statement on just, like, what it can mean to give someone who's, like, doomed for a moment beforehand the illusion of it's gonna be okay. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, he doesn't say that in a sneering way. In fact, he lauds the person who's been suicidal for years as the only intelligent person in the room, but their choice to do something nice for the idiots around them is a good thing. And, like, that's a fucked up thing to do to people, but it means something. And in this movie, like, it just doesn't really mean anything. And I don't think... I don't know.
It's hard to wrap
my mind around it, because it's not important to me. It didn't try hard enough, or even it wasn't coy enough. It's not subtle. It's just empty. It feels.
It's very heavy-handed in what it's trying to say.
Bill, you're right. It is heavy-handed, but, like, about nothing.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm now going to start assuming. I'm not going to assume things about Solanz, but, like, the more we talk about this, I can just the worldview that he projects in this movie is literally like, oh wait, that was kind of the point. I wanted you to feel that this is totally empty, and even, you know, the cutest companions in our life do nothing to, you know, buffer the nihilistic ways of human beings.
But it was so weird because I don't know about you. I own a dog. I own two dogs, and, like, they do help. You know, like, that's the weirdest thing. It's not like it's like trying to give lie to the myth of man's best friend. It, like, at one point someone says, like, we're dogs' only friends.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that's not true. I've watched dogs make friends with lots of things, and you know, dogs are better suited for nature than we are, so maybe that character is just wrong. In fact, I'm almost certain she is, but, like, I've had shitty days, and I've come home, and I've seen my dogs, and they've made things better. And that's a real experience that can't be discounted just because everyone's gonna die someday.
But none of the characters in this film really show any kind of affection except for the cancer kid.
I guess, like, Greta Gerwig's character kind of does too.
She saves it, nurses it back to health. But beyond that, like, it's always just, like, in her arms, doing Danny a whole DeVito, lot of nothing.
Danny DeVito turns it into a suicide weapon. I mean, like,
yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the fuck that was.
I kind of laughed at that. I felt bad about myself afterwards.
It was a little funny, but, like, it didn't really come to anything. And it's not like the dog had symbolized, like, his hope. You know, it's not like we met him and he was sad, and then he got the dog and he started feeling better, and then things started seeming okay, and then things got worse, and then he turned the dog into a suicide vest wearing kill machine. I mean, he just has this dog. He's always miserable. Mm-hmm. Even though it really does seem like he's about to go some places, and then he just flips out and then puts a suicide vest on the dog. And I don't even know if it's a real bomb. I'm assuming it wasn't, but who knows?
That was one of those too that, like, you know, if you want to get into the nitty gritty of that one, like, that's something that didn't need, you know, the millennial condescension. Like, I think it's kind of an interesting idea. I mean, all the professors I've had in my life, it's very interesting to think about the ones. There were ones who Danny DeVito seemed very similar to, and you know, they were just kind of surly, but, you know, they had a wizened charm to them. But there was just, like, a perpetual sadness there, and I did think it was kind of interesting, like, the conversation that he has is with I wasn't sure if that was the dean or the head of the department or who that was, but the person who was talking, who he talks to in the office, and she's like, mm-hmm. Yeah. The students have complained. And he gets that great line, like, there's a general consensus of the complainers. Oh, shoot, yeah. What does he say? Like, the complainers are saying I'm too negative, and...
Yeah. Well, I thought that interview that they were having was hilarious to the point where it was almost getting on my nerves. like that's kind of this film in a nutshell. Is it if this was like small little 2 or 3, you know, 5 minute shorts, I think I would like it a lot more. But sure. Because it's extended out to the time frame that it is, I'm just like, oh, fuck, get to the point. And it doesn't have a point. And you're like, cool, that'd be fine in a short film. But it's not so fine in these 30-minute segments that make up a whole movie. Like, that's not okay. So I don't know. It's hilarious because it's like, what if then is Danny DeVito's – like a whole tagline. That's what he keeps telling his students. And I just sure. wanted to yell at the screen. Why don't you take your own advice? Like, what are you doing in this film? Like, what is the, what if, like, what if everybody has a puppy?
Well, the funny thing is like nothing? That I kept wondering that, like, what if, is this movie a refutation of that idea? I mean, and then, like, they say, like, so you're this guy, and he says, what if I am? And then it's like, aha, that's the end of this one.
Yeah, yeah.
And then how does a dog who goes from being, I guess, like, evidence become...
I was really wanting that guy to, like, rescue the dog and then end up with a dog. And that's our next story. I was like, that would be perfect. Like, oh, look at this cute little dog. And it got strapped with, like, a bunch of bomb material. And you're like, oh, I'm gonna rescue you, and then
it's like cool. A more intense version of a war zone dog.
Yeah, yeah.
But of course, and it's a wiener dog, and it probably doesn't know anything. One of my dogs is actually a war zone dog.
Ah, nice.
Yeah. Wow.
Lightning, who we've probably heard on this podcast a lot because he barks a lot, comes from Afghanistan. He was found by the British military. So there's that. I'm just going to use this as an excuse to talk about how great my dogs are. Yesterday, I was in bed and Lightning jumped up and licked my face. He was all like, get up. And I was like, fine.
Feed me.
Actually, he'd already been fed. He just wanted to hang out.
Ah.
Yeah.
For being a lazy ass.
It was 9 o'clock in the morning, all right? It's not like it was noon. No. But yeah, no. He's a good guy.
Yeah. Fuck
good
this
guy, that Lightning. So did you guys ever have dogs growing up?
Oh, I love dogs. Dogs oh, are yeah. Dogs are great.
Do you have
and
a dog now,
I have no, I do not have a dog right now.
Cute little
but,
fluffy pug.
I wish. They have a lot of health issues and they're very expensive.
They are. They're like bulldogs in that way. It's sad.
Yes. Our apartment doesn't allow dogs. It's very,
oh,
very
damn.
Sad.
I got out of college and I'd never been able to have a dog as a kid. I had a cat, which is nice, you know, but it's not the same. But so I had an apartment and immediately got a lizard. Because that nice. Was something else I wasn't allowed to have as a kid, and I didn't think okay. I was ready for a dog.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Now I have 2 dogs and a lizard.
Oh.
Good times. Are we done? Are we done here?
Yes.
Because I'll legitimately just keep talking about my pets.
Yeah. No.
Follow
me
on Instagram
I'm
to see pictures of my pets.
I'm real done with this movie.
Sweet. Yeah. So Wiener yeah. Dog. If you have Amazon Prime, it's free.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the Club is also on Amazon Prime, and that one's actually pretty good.
Which
yeah.
one?
The Club. That's Pablo oh. Larraín's movie from one of 3 this year.
Oh, wow.
Dang.
Just bananas.
All right. Well, that's that. Reminder to everyone out there to tell us what you'd like us to review from Mubi. Again, try to pick something that's going to be up there for a while. Don't be a dick. And you can find us on Twitter to do that, at Film Stage Show. And if you don't know what's on Mubi, head over to Mubi.com, that's MUBI.com, and you can see what they have currently. And if you like what you see, which I'm sure you will, you can get a free month trial of Mubi by going to MUBI.com/filmstage. It's a free 1 month, no strings attached trial on us because we love you and we love Mubi and we think that you two would love each other. So,
it's nice.
The blind date of the cinematic online streaming universe. swipe right for Mubi. Oh, God. Guys, let's end this podcast. that's it. Next week, we're going to be talking about Blair Witch, which is
Hell yeah.
the sequel to the Blair Witch Project that I'm really curious how they're going to work in all the mythology that was built up during Blair Witch 2, Book of Shadows.
They're not.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's Book of Shadows, Blair Witch 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're pretending that film doesn't exist.
You guys know that was directed by the documentarian who did the West Memphis 3, those big...
I did know, those, yeah.
That trilogy of, like, you know, really well-known docs.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
That's one of those weird things that, like, I don't think people realize. Is like, every once in a while, like, a great, weird director will get something crazy like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, the 7-Up dude does, like,
also... Stars Jeffrey Donovan?
I did not.
I love Jeffrey Donovan. Anyway, so we're going to be talking about Blair Witch next week. So go out and check that out, and you can understand where our opinions are coming from. That is all for today, though. So...
If y'all haven't seen Blair Witch, this was my recommendation to Michael earlier. If you haven't seen the original, I would suggest watching it. Turn out all your lights, you know, make it scary as possible, and then also realize that the internet was a baby back then.
Yeah,
so.
We're definitely gonna have to give some context on that episode, not right now, as to why that was such a huge thing. Also, I want to tell people that our newest roundtable, which will be coming out later this week, we're gonna be talking about remakes, and so we want you to send us your favorite remake. And that is in honor of literally everything that's coming out right now. And then we're also going to be soliciting true life stories that you would like to see made into a movie. And that is Care of Sully, which is out in theaters now. So what true life event would you like to see made into a movie? Try to surprise us. Try to be clever. But don't be too clever. Don't say, like, my life. Like, you're important.
I thought you needed an answer right now, and I was like, nope, definitely didn't do my homework here.
No, we're doing this all on the round table. You will see tweets from us. I predict that we will get a lot of answers. Ladies and gentlemen, that's all for today. Let's tell the fine folks where we can be found in the interim. Bill Graham.
You can find me staring at pug faces on Instagram.
You posted a video of pugs on Facebook, didn't you? Like a
yes.
couple days ago.
Oh, I like frequently post videos of pugs. Yes.
If you have videos, send them to Bill.
Yes, I would love them. I would watch
Twitter.
Them. Yes.
BFG.
Yes, that's my user handle. I'm probably going to change my title here soon. Something to do with pugs. Pug lover. I like it.
Oh no.
And then, you can also find me writing about movies on the film stage and also freshfiction.tv.
All right. Michael Snidell.
You can see videos that I post to my mom's, golden doodle. At Twitter, at Snidell.
That's a doodle in gold, correct?
we are going to have to follow through on these. You realize that, right?
No, I have done it. Her name's Lady, and she is a peach. And wait, what else do I do? Oh, I write things. You can read some things from me at Film Stage and Pace Magazine. This week I have an interview with the Operation Avalanche director.
Okay.
And I'm going to have a piece on Atlanta later this week.
All right. Nice. As for myself, you can find me posting pictures of my dogs, Lana and Lightning, and maybe my lizard, Theo, and my wife's lizard, Smaug, on Twitter at Brian J. Rowan. You can find my newest writing on thefilmstage.com. I wrote an essay about why Passion by Brian De Palma is an underlooked classic in the waiting. And that's pretty much it. I don't feel like telling y'all anything else. That is all for today, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for joining us, and come back next week.